My name is Shelley Zulsdorf, and I'm the Associate Pastor of Student Ministries here, and I'm the one that said, let's get uncomfortable and be in tables this morning. So I know for so many of you, you might have walked in shocked, a little uncomfortable. You're like, this isn't where I sit. Like, I have my seat, Shelley, and this is not it. Okay, perfect. So we have a couple people still coming in. We got seats in the front right here, Chelsea and Seth and the Chamberlains and Hillary. They're really kind up here, I promise. They love Jesus. I love it. Yeah, we got more seats right up here, right where I can see you. Four, if anybody wants four up here. Yeah, I just thought, man, we're wrapping up this series on Romans 12. Where we've been looking at the transformed life, and specifically these last couple weeks, we've been looking at verses 9 through 21 and how to live out this transformed life, how to live a life of love and how that can be played out. And there's been some really challenging sermons. I think our pastoral team did an incredible job of just with full love for our people, but challenging us to live out God's ways. And as I was thinking, if we're gonna ponder this a little bit deeply, if we're gonna ponder what God is asking us to do, what Paul is challenging us to do with this beautiful and challenging vision of what community looks like, a community that's marked by love and humility, hospitality, and peace, I thought it would be helpful for us this morning to gather like the Roman house church did. Those that received this letter, the original people that received this letter, that gathered in houses because they didn't have churches, that gathered in each other's homes around tables, encouraging one another, discussing what God's word together, and being God's people in community. And so I thought this would help us go a little bit more deeply, being communal in our mourning as we dive into what it is that we are learning in Romans 12, 9 through 21. And there's bread and juice on your table, and as tempting as it is, and you might be really hungry to eat it right now, I'm gonna ask you to wait on that until the end, okay? But I wanna start this morning, I wanna read through Romans 12, 9 through 21. And I want you to think about, because you're going to share around your table, I want you to think about which command that Paul is giving do you find challenging or convicting right now? Maybe it's based on one of the sermons that was given. Maybe it's just reading it this morning. Which do you find challenging or convicting? And I'm going to read it off here. There's Bibles that are under some of our chairs that you can bring out. But let me read this, and then we're going to have a table discussion. It says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, "It is mine to avenge. I will repay," says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It's meaty. There's a lot in there and a lot of things I think we're challenged by. And so here's what I want us to do. At your tables, I want you to share this question that you're thinking on is which of these commands do you find most challenging or convicting in your current season of life? You're gonna have 5 minutes to share, so make sure just one person's not sharing the whole time. This is a community sharing, so you wanna keep it brief, your stories in that. 5 minutes, and then we'll come back. Hopefully, you're getting to know the people at your table. getting to know those that are around you, but even more so hearing in different seasons, there's different things that are going to challenge us. There's different things that are harder to live out in this passage. And maybe you're like, gosh, the whole thing right now is so hard. And these commands really are challenging commands that Paul had given to the Roman house church that's now given to us as well with how to live. And I think it can be a really overwhelming checklist for us that we can get into, that we can go, okay, how do I be a good person? How do I be a good person? Let me just start checking off the list. But I'm afraid if we do that checklist mentality of how to be a good person, then we'll treat this passage like a New Year's resolution, where we would just look at it and go, okay, I'm going to go all in, and you go 1 month in, and then you start to teeter out, and you give up, and it's too hard, and I'm going to just go back to what I know. That's not what Paul wanted them to do here. These are Christian ethics that he's asking us to live out. And if these are the ethics we're asked to live out, but they're hard to live out, and it's easy for us to give up on them, then where do we go from here? How do we live out the things that are really challenging for us that we just don't know if we can do in this season? And I love this Catholic philosopher, Alistair MacIntyre, in his book, After Virtues. We looked at what he said in our seminary class, and it said, I can only answer the question, what am I to do, if I can answer the prior question of what story or stories do I find myself a part of? What story or stories do I find myself a part of? And so here's what I want to start with this morning is, what story gets your heart beating? What story gets your heart beating? Because we all have a story that has a driving force in our life. We have narratives that drive our passions and our choices and everything that we do. Maybe it's our past, the things that happened to us, the joys, the heartaches, the challenging things we face, the experiences that we have that becomes our driving force of why we are who we are today and what we do and the choices that we make. That's our driving force. Maybe it's your fears, the things you're worried about, that drive every choice that you then make, everything that you make. Or maybe it's the culture, and maybe it's being a part of the culture or being against the culture that you feel like, that's what drives my passion, that's what gets my heart beating. Maybe it's the political climate right now, and you're either excited or appalled, and that's driving every part of your conversation that you're having or every choice that you're making or what love actually looks like. We all have stories that are getting our hearts beating fast. We all, and these are not necessarily bad stories. I don't want you to hear that. These are not bad stories, but should they be the biggest driving force in our life? Should they be the biggest overarching story that drives every decision in our life? When we look at the Roman house church in the historical context of what's happening, I think sometimes we can romanticize the early church. We can be like, wow, they had it all figured out. They were working together, they were getting called out, they were figuring it out. But we have to remember the historical context of what was happening there in the Roman house churches. There was a lot at play when they gathered together, a lot of stories and narratives that were coming into their space. And first you look at, there's the Roman culture and ethics, the bigger Roman idea that was happening, where one part of the Roman culture and ethics was status climbing. Status climbing was a huge part of their culture, and you only interacted with those that would help you in your status. You did not want to interact with those that would consider it of low positions. You didn't want to socialize with them because that would interfere with your own social climbing. And so you didn't do that socially. You did it maybe in a working way or a master and servant way. But it was very much the Roman ethics was you stuck with your people and you stayed with them in order to keep yourself climbing up socially. Furthermore, in the Roman church, in the house church, when they gathered together, there were so many different cultural groups interacting with each other. You had the Jewish people and you had the Roman Gentiles, both with different starting places, different stories, different backgrounds. Then they could come in a lot of conflict when they tried to figure out, well, how do we live together with our past? And how do we come together? There was also people gathering that were refugees, foreigners, prisoners. There was the rich and the poor coming together. There was the masters and the servants sitting at the same table. There was families, there was widows, there was orphans. all sitting together now in a house church, trying to figure out with all their different stories, how do we live and be God's people together? And so there's that challenge of being in harmony and being with peace with each other, with all these different pieces. And even more so, the Roman house church, they had some real fears like us. And for them, their real fears were most of the Christians were being sent to the Roman games and being brutally murdered. And here they would gather together, and is it worth it with all our fears for this story to be our driving force? They had real enemies that didn't like them. And so they had to navigate this. And all these stories, their fears, their cultural differences, their cultural ethics that they're surrounded by could have been the driving force that got their hearts beating, that shaped everything that they did. But if we remember in Romans 12, 1, it says this idea, in view of God's mercy. This was the beginning of our whole series we looked at. In view of God's mercy, to offer yourselves as a living sacrifice. This means in view of God's merciful, loving, kind story and what he has done. So among all the stories in their lives, it was overshadowed by a bigger story, this bigger story that infiltrated their lives and changed everything for them. They were so overwhelmed by the story of God that Jesus died and rose again. They believed it wholeheartedly. They had all their hope in that, that this is the story that overshadowed every story that brought them together around tables, in-house churches, constantly. And when we sit in humility with how much God loves us and what he has done for us, it changes everything. And this passage then no longer becomes about a checklist of how do I become a good person. It becomes about praising God who loves us and poured everything out for us. And in that moment, we're then being transformed to then go, God, you love me so much, which means I look around at all the different stories here, and you love them just as much. And that's what changes us, to not just have a checklist of things to do to be a good person, but to be transformed by, gosh, the love of God that is so overwhelming, that is so life-changing. How can I not start to begin to live some of these things out? And it's the story of God that propels us to not just praise him and let it change our life, but to then think of our neighbor who might be lonely on Thanksgiving, to think of those who are sick in the hospital, that are needing to experience this love. It's that love, that story of what God has done that propels us to begin to have our hearts beat so hard that we would want to begin to live this out. And so God knows we are people that are forgetful, and so we need to be reminded of that over and over and over again. So our hearts can remain soft and our hearts can remember what God has done, and we can remain soft to our neighbors and those around us and all the stories they have. And that is where this gathering, us coming together, is so important, because how we worship together matters. It matters. It changes everything. And when we look at the Roman house church and the motley crew of people that come together, it makes no sense to so many people from outsiders of how did they come together calling themselves the family of God with all their differences, with all the things that are happening? How are they able to do that? Well, their worship together informed the bigger story of what they are living out. Their worship, how they worship together, how they live together, informed that bigger story, and they were rehearsing that truth in every interaction that they had with one another. And we get an idea of what the early church worship gatherings look like when we look at Acts 2, 42 through 47. It says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. In their gatherings, They were deliberately living out the story of God together. They were being intentional with living this good news. Every part of their gathering reflected the good news that they had received from Jesus. Every part mattered and shaped them to live into God's story. So how we worship together matters. How this time together, this time on Sunday mornings, this time in our small groups, the times when we gather together matters so much, because how we worship together reveals what we believe, which then impacts how we live. How we worship together reveals what we believe, and that impacts then how we live. This is an overflow. How we are to live out and love in actions is an overflow from our worship together as we worship Jesus. And the people knew. This is what I love. The Lord added to their number. It didn't say because they had these great sermons. He added to their number because people were looking around and saying there's something different about that community. There's something different happening. This makes no sense. But their actions revealed what they truly believed, the hope that they had in Jesus. That's what their actions was showing the world. And so being together, when we gather together, we're actually challenged by each other. We're challenged to rehearse the story of God with how we interact with one another, with how we worship together. And so this gathered worship space, when we gather together, it gets to be a place to practice and be challenged by how we're to live in this Romans 12, 9 through 21 passage. It's a space that you get to practice and be challenged by that. And honestly, I look around, and knowing stories around here, knowing stories in our congregation, we have a really motley crew. We have so many stories. We have so many different socioeconomic backgrounds. We have so many cultural differences. We have so many starting places. We have those who've grown up in the church and those who have not. And it's in this space, this gathered group, this family of God, that we get to know one another, knowing that we are worshiping in the same story, the bigger story of what God has done, and that gets to challenge us and change us as we worship together. And I look at this gathered group, and honestly, each time that we come together, I am challenged more and more. I'm encouraged more and more to live out the things in Romans 12, 9 through 21. I'm encouraged to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. When I sit with others and I hear their stories and the things that they're praying for, the things that feel unanswered, the hurt, the pain, yet they aren't giving up. For someone that wants to throw in the towel sometimes, it is such an encouragement to me when I'm with you to go, we can do this. We do have this story of hope. And so I can live out more, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer, when I'm worshiping alongside you and hearing your story in that. One of the things I mentioned at our table is practicing hospitality. It feels so hard right now. I have a 15-month baby, another baby on the way. I'm like, where do I have time to open up my space, to open up for others? And I look around, and there are some of you way more busy than I could ever be, that is putting your heart out to serve others, that is creating space for people when they walk in to feel welcomed, that had really hard weeks. I see as new people come in, they're like, you know, it's a hard week, but I'm going to welcome this person so they can feel like this is home. I'm challenged when we gather together to live that out a little bit more. I'm challenged to not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. I'll never forget going into a church, having this time, and there was someone who was homeless who walked in. And everyone else in the church was like, oh, they're not dressed right. But the person who invited them looked at them with full dignity, that the story of God is part of their life too, and welcomed them and shaped the rest of the church in how they worshiped that morning, reminding them, rehearsing the truth of what God has done. And even more so, it says to live at peace with everyone. Gosh, there's so many times we're in conflict with one another. Conflict wasn't far from the Roman house church. They had it constantly. And yet they had to figure out that they could work and be at peace with one another. They had to be challenged by that idea because they worshiped the same God who brought them the same hope, who's making them be a family together to bring good news to the world. So there's so much value for me on not skipping out on this time together. Not skipping out, not just coming late because we don't like certain things or leaving at parts of the service because we don't like what's happening, but sticking it out together, living this with each other, gathering, because what we're doing, the life we want to live in Romans 12, 9 through 21, it is not an individual endeavor. This is not just for how you can become a good person. This is a communal event. This is a communal endeavor that we are learning together what God is wanting to teach us, how to be his people. And it starts here in this place. Because if we can't figure it out, if we can't figure out how to love one another, how to be at peace with one another, how to uplift one another and encourage one another, then how can we do that to a world that's craving that? So God has gathered us intentionally, and we get to practice what it means to worship him, to love him, and to love others. And this gets to be an overflow in the rest of our lives. And so if we are to live as described in Romans 12, 9 through 21, we need to understand that our worship together matters. The story that we are living by matters. Because this living this out starts with being overwhelmed by the love and grace God has lavished on us, and then continues by us encouraging one another to live out that story, encouraging one another that you are part of that story, that God has changed your life. And so I know some of us were uncomfortable when we walked in, we saw the tables, and we're like, that's not where I sit. But this is what I want us to do this morning, is I want us to rehearse this story together. I want us to end our time encouraging one another towards the story of God, where we are overwhelmed by his love, and that gets to flow out into everything. And what the early church did, as we read, is they would break bread. They would encourage one another in the truth. And this is really, we get to speak God's love and truth over one another. We get to break bread, remembering the sacrifice that Jesus did. And so what we're going to do next right now is we're going to be God's church together. We're going to do a moment where we're going to encourage one another. Because if we want to live out these Romans 12, 9 through 21 verses, then we need to be encouraged in this story to live it out. And so we're going to have on your tables, there is a card with a blessing. And a blessing really is declaring God's favor and goodness upon one another. You get to speak truth over that person. And what's sweet about this blessing is it's the same blessing that Ben just did for our baby dedication. But it's not one that stops at our baby dedication. This blessing, which is in Numbers 6, is the blessing that God asked to be spoken over his people so that they would know how to love they are. And then the last line of the blessing comes from Romans 15, 13, the end of this letter, the end of this chapter, where you hear Paul's heart for them. Everything that he's saying, here's the blessing that he spoke over them. And so what we're going to do in a moment is you have juice, you have bread, and you have a blessing. And you're going to first pour everyone the juice so everyone has a cup. And then one at a time, you're going to take the bread. You're going to look to the person to your right. You're going to offer the bread. They're going to rip off a chunk. We have plenty. That whole challah bread is for your whole table. So think of how you're going to divide that out. Leave no leftovers, please. You're going to pass it to the person, and as they break off the bread, the person to your right, you are going to read the blessing over them. If you don't know their name, learn their name, say their name, and speak the blessing to them, and then they're going to take the bread, they're going to look to the person to their right and offer that same blessing. So the written blessing is on your table. But this is a time where we get to encourage one another. We get to offer to one another and remind them of the story of God that they're a part of and how this gets to shape then how we live out our lives. And there's also gluten-free bread in the bowl if you need that. So we're going to take about 5 minutes to do this, and then I'll wrap us up. As you wrap up your time of blessing, we're going to enter into a time of worship where we're going to praise our God who brings this motley crew together, who brings us in all our stories, because we are, our hearts are beating after the big story that has changed our lives. And may we overflow from there to encourage one another to live this out in all our ways. So let us worship now together.